Lago Homer to everyone. Okay, happy Lago Homer to everyone. Just to pick up where we left off in the halachos of cooking on Shabbos. So we were discussing some of the important fundamentals of Hilchos Bishul. Last week we discussed where Bishul takes place. If a person is heating up an item and it's not fully cooked, so we explained that there's a machlokas between the Rashba and the Rambam whether or not past a third and a half Bishul before it's fully cooked, is that still going to have implications? And we spoke about, you know, a practical implications in terms of rare steaks and meat that might not be fully cooked, which could potentially be an issue. We paskin like that opinion of the Rambam, that we have to be concerned that until something is completely cooked, then that could potentially be an issue of Bishul on Shabbos. So before you're returning food to the flame on, or to the hot plate, whatever you're returning to, you have to know when you're going to potentially violate Bishul. I just want to point out, we'll hopefully spend a little bit more time on this in a later future shiur, but it's very important to realize when you're taking down and you're learning all these concepts. So a lot of times when we're learning halacha, so we're searching for who we paskin like. You know, there's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Rashba. The Rashba says one something is a third cook, one something's a half cooked, even though it's only partially cooked. Machol ben Rusai. There's two opinions what machol ben Rusai is. That's why I said it. And a half, but as long as something is partially cooked, so that's cooked, and no longer you're going to violate Bishul anymore. So the rabbi tells me we don't paskin like that. So usually we're not going to keep that in our memory. We're not going to try to focus on it because it's not relevant. We don't paskin like it. That's not entirely true when it comes to Michel Shabbos. There's very big differences between initially lechatchila and levet. And a person needs to know what poskim and what rishonim are still in the playing field that could potentially save their dish in bidyeved post facto situations, which is important to highlight. So I'm not only trying to present to you the different opinions because it's important to get the right background to understand, like we spoke about last week, to clarify in order to understand where things are developing from. But it's also crucial, specifically in these halachos, it can mamish make or break. The fact that there is a shita out there that there is to be mako with, so sometimes that could really affect the situation and really be something that you could rely on bidyeved as opposed to lechatchila. So we said last week that we're machmir, that you need to make sure everything is cooked before you're going to put it back on to any heat source, because otherwise, chas v'shalom, no matter what your heating situation is, you could have the frumis, you know, kadera, you know, a blech, whatever it is, all the shittas, if you're cooking, you're cooking. No one is matir you to cook on Shabbos. So I don't care how big of a tower you have in your kitchen on your hot plate, if it's going to be cooking, that's going to be a problem. So that's something that we have to make sure that everything's fully cooked. I mentioned last week we were speaking about the different kalim that Bishul is relevant to. We spoke about the kli rishon, that's al gabi aish, and even when that first pot, that first kli rishon is taken off the fire, it could still cook. So you have to be very concerned, and you have to know exactly what you're putting inside that pot, even though it's off the fire, that could still have the capacity to be mevashel and chas v'shalom be a transgression midoraisa on Shabbos. So that's what we spoke about in terms of the kli rishon on the fire, off the fire. Last week we developed and we said when you go one stage after the kli rishon off the fire, but you're now taking it out and you're going to pour it onto something else, so that also has a partial ability to cook. And that's what we said called in halacha irui from a kli rishon. Iroi from a kli rishon, which is called pouring from the initial vessel. And we included it within that, although it is a machlokes, we included within that a ladle. A ladle doesn't necessarily, it's a machlekes, the Taz and the Marami Rutenberg, and a major, major debate of the poskim, whether or not a ladle is considered a separate entity, that I can now consider it another kli, or a ladle is governed by that original pot, and therefore it's considered still that kli rishon. So the practical implication will be is if I'm going to pour not from the soup pot, but from the ladle, so then that ultimately would be a potential issue that it could cook partially. It could cook the outer surface, which is what we call, the way we paskin, mevashel kidei klipa. It has the ability to heat up the surface. We pointed out that area, that situations where you're not going to be cooking the surface, namely a kid's bottle, a plastic bottle, so that might be helpful. But outside of really that example, most of the time, whether it's liquid or solid, you have to be concerned, even if it's not kli rishon al gabei esh, even if it's not a kli rishon shelo al gabei esh, even if it's been removed so much that it's an eroy of a kli rishon shelo al gabei esh, still has the capacity to still connect and be mevashel on some level, at least the surface level of kidei klipa. Last week, we focused on the fact that the initial connection to the fire is crucial, and therefore that if that's lacking, that might have practical implications. That's what we spoke about, microwaves and a dud shemesh, something which was never cooked in the fire to begin with, might not have the same, you know, culpability and the same transgression because it's lacking the fire element in the cooking process. We mentioned that it might even have effects on legabe bishalakum, but that's not really what we're going to discuss right now. I just wanted to point out, just as a little bit of a tangent, but I realized after the shir that, you know, none of this is usually relevant to talk about. We spoke about dud shemeshes and ways in Israel that some people have to heat up their hot water, not through the regular, you know, boiler like we have in our houses, but they have this contraption that, according to some poskim, might have been a permissive, at least a leniency, and that at least in the hospitals, if a person really needs it, it could be a potential leniency and definitely make things better in certain situations. There's a fascinating shiloh that's really relevant. I remembered after the shir, I wanted to just share with you just to realize how lamaisa all these sugyas are. And really, Corona is bringing. I can't even begin to explain to you how things that a person might learn. And I was telling my boys, my talmidim in the yeshiva, that things that a person might learn, they think is never relevant because you have the regular mode of the way halacha works, and these things don't come up, and you never know when every single child that never usually come up in a shas adchak like this could really become so relevant. So what I'm leading up to is you have a lot of medical staff, you have nurses, you have doctors that are involved in very important jobs and saving people's lives, and it's pikuach nefesh, and they are sometimes coming home on Yontif or on Shabbos, and they want to shower. So Yontif might be a little bit more easier. It's a really a separate discussion on what the story with showering on Yontif. We could have a different set of shiurim for that. But Shabbos is much more complicated. Shabbos is you're affecting when you turn on the hot water. So you're affecting more water to get heated up into the boiler. As this water leaves, more water enters in, and that's a psik resha. That's by my action there's an automatic direct result, that an inevitability that it's going to now cause the heating of more water. Now, if you analyze our boiler system, so our boiler is really heating up in a hot water pot that's on the fire. So that's a psik resha of bishul. Although I don't have the kavana to do that, but that's a psik resha. My kavana myself, it's an inevitability that there's going to be more water going to be heated up. This is why lamaisa, we're not allowed to open up our hot waters in our houses, on our sinks or in our showers, because there is a biblical issue of a psik resha of being mevashel, of cooking up new water that's going to be replenished inside the boiler. However, In Eretz Yisrael, many of the poskim said, if a person has a Dud Shemesh, based on everything that we introduced last week, that is the first option of what a person who's in a medical staff, whether a doctor or a nurse, that's concerned when they come home that the virus or the anything that they may have been exposed to in the hospital could potentially lead to pikuach nefesh, and they want to make sure it's totally off their body. So the first option is to use the heterim that we spoke about last week and to use the Dud Shemesh, even if it's not accepted according to all opinions, but it's for sure better than a classic boiler. So that was all based on the fundamental principles that we discussed last week about the lack of ash and the lack of fire when it comes to Bishul. Okay, a person has the Shaila in America also where there aren't a Dud Shemesh, so you have to work out with other leniencies. There are other potential leniencies, but it's just a fascinating practical example of just what's going on, how things that we don't think are relevant are actually more relevant than we think. In terms of Bishul, I thought that before we get into really clicheny and all the different practical ways of using our different vessels as we remove ourselves from that Kli Rishon or that Ira Kli Rishon, it's important to really discuss other items that might have the Bishul issue. As we pointed out up until now, so we were really dealing with a solid item, and we basically broke it down and we said, as long as the item is fully cooked, so then you're not concerned. And if it's partially cooked, so we don't hold like the Rashba, and we should be concerned until the item is fully cooked. So what we were basically assuming was that once an item is cooked, so then there is no concept of cooking after that. That is what's known as the concept of, based on the Gemara, that the Gemara introduces Kol Shelo Baba Chama Lifnei HaShabbos. The Gemara is implying that if an item was Baba Chama Lifnei HaShabbos, if an item was heated up before Shabbos, so then you don't have the concept of Bishul after Bishul. Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. So this is a running theme throughout the Malachos of Shabbos. Certain malachas you have ain achar the original thing, ain bishul achar bishul. So here there is a very, very important machlekes harishonim, whether or not that is across the board. When we say ain bishul achar bishul, and the Gemara alludes to the fact that there is ain bishul achar bishul, does that apply to everything, or does that only apply to some things? So came along the Rambam and the Rashba. The Ram and the Rashban, they said, the Gemara said, Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, it applies to all cooked items. No matter what you're dealing with, once it's cooked, it's never able to be cooked again, and you have nothing to be concerned with. Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. Wow. However, the Tur, the Rosh, many of the poskim disagreed, and they made the Rabbeinu Yonah, and they made a chiluk of, there's a distinction between a liquid item and a solid item. It could be when it comes to a solid item, ein bishul achar bishul. Let's take our example of the meat. It's fully cooked. So then to put it back on the fire or to put it back on whatever your heating element, as we'll learn in the future, Mitzvah, what is the best type of heating element to use? So that's okay to reheat because you're not violating bishul. But when it comes to a liquid item, so that would be problematic. I think the Rambam and the Rashba make a lot of sense. The Gemara says there's no Bishul Achar Bishul. Why should we distinguish between different items? So I think that if anyone wants to say, or I can answer myself, I think that the answer is that when a person just looks at a solid item, you take a piece of schnitzel, you can put it, if it's really geschmack, nice, real Hamish piece of schnitzel, a week afterwards, it's still the effects of the cooking process and are still there. It's still great, even if it's straight out of the fridge. So some people like to heat it up just to have it, fresh and to have that out. But it's still, the effects of the bishul are still retained in the item. However, when it comes to liquid items, that's not true. Liquid items is all affected, the cooking process is all connected to the temperature. And if the temperature is gone, if the temperature is reduced, if the temperature is no longer found at that original state of what it was in the liquid item, so then what we would say in halacha is azalalei bishule. So then the bishul is totally gone. It's as if it never existed. The bishul is ineffective. The whole purpose of a bishul, the reason why I heat up water, is to have a cup of hot water, is to have a cup of hot soup. The second that that temperature is no longer there, so then the bishul is no longer found inside the entity. It's not like that piece of schnitzel. It's not like that piece of steak that you could say it's retained in that item. If that's the case, and that's the psak on the Shulchan Aruch, if that's the case, we have to be very concerned when it comes to liquid items, that yesh bishul achar bishul. So it's very, now we have to be really put on our radar scans, what are we looking out for in terms of when it comes to liquid, to really make sure that we're not going to violate the isser of bishul. So that's in terms of the difference between liquid and solid. So everything we discussed really changes when it comes to liquids, because now you're going to have to be concerned that you can be mevashel again after even though you had an original bishul. Now the question gets a little bit more complicated because you have a lot of dishes that have a combination of both a solid and a liquid. So let's say you have a meat that's sitting in a sauce. So is that considered a solid, and that's governed by the halachas of ein bishul achar bishul? Or is that considered a liquid that it's now governed by yesh bishul achar bishul? Because now the temperature is no longer piping hot. So Emir Tzisham, I'll get back to in a second what the temperature that you have to be concerned about is. But let's just first analyze this question. So what happens when you have a combination of an entity? So there were really three different opinions in the poskim about this issue. And again, I highlight all the different opinions, not because of necessarily what we're going to do initially and how we're going to paskin la halacha. And I'm going to tell you clearly how we do paskin la halacha and what everyone should do in their kitchens. However, it does play a role in terms of when you have a shaila and when things go wrong or when a mistake was made. Not necessarily does that mean I have to automatically throw out the dish and things are usur b'di'evid. Because if you have things that might be on the playing field of halacha, although not being an accepted opinion, that's still relevant to take into account b'di'evid post facto. So there was the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch Harav. And the Shulchan Aruch Harav said, you have any ounce of moisture, anything, then he was machmir, and that would be considered liquid, and you have to be concerned. So that's one extreme. You have the opposite extreme of the Prima Gadim. Now, I want to introduce, Prima Gadim is a pretty big player. I'm saying, like, this is not like a real Manda Amr over here, a real someone we really have to respect over here. And he said something fascinating. He said that no, he said you follow the majority. The way you consider whether or not this is considered a liquid or a solid is whether or not this is majority is solid or the majority is liquid. If that's the case, there are going to be a lot of dishes that we're going to have that are sitting in gravy or sitting in sauce, that's not going to be an issue of bishul achar bishul. Why? Because it's considered like a davar yavish. It's considered like a solid. There's liquid there. Doesn't matter. I follow the majority, and the majority tells me that it's a solid. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva that he does not understand this Prima Gadim. You know, he'd like to understand this Prima Gadim. He doesn't want to throw it out, but he has a hard time understanding this Prima Gadim. And he says that he thinks that a person cannot paskin like this Prima Gadim. Because when it comes to Malacha Shabbos, we don't look at the majority or the minority. If there's any amount that you're doing a Malacha on, if it's, even if it's the minority of the entire dish, but that's a significant amount that now we can be considered like we're reheating that, and therefore that's going to be problematic. So Rav Moshe writes that even if you have a gravy, even if it's the minority amount, if you have meat that's sitting in a sauce, so then that's going to be an issue of bishul achar bishul if you're reheating that sauce. However, many poskim in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote like this, that they didn't necessarily say to the extreme of the Shulchan Aruch Harav. If you have some moisture that's chicken or the dish is not sitting in separate sauce, but it just has some moisture that is now going to be created from just coming out of the meat. And now it gets its own lechus, the way they say it, from the fact that it's going through the heating process. And it's not like sitting in the gravy, and it's not like sitting in a separate sauce. Then the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chosa says that minute amount of moisture can still be reheated up, and we can view this as a Dover Yavish. So again, primarily in terms of majority versus minority, Rav Moshe says we cannot accept the Prima God. Svardim are makel on the Shaila. Rav Adya Yosef says that that we can follow the majority. However, when it comes to Ashkenazim, we have to be machmir, even if there's just a little bit of sauce, if it's independent, so then that's going to be a problem. However, if there's just a little bit of moisture that's going to come out through the cooking, so then that's not going to necessarily be a problem for reheating for the issue of bishul achar bishul. It's important to point out that there is another issue that a person, I think we spoke about this in past year, and you'll tell me if I'm right, but we spoke about this in the shiurim that we gave with wipes and schita and dash. I mentioned that there is an issue midrabanan that Chazal kind of invented, not necessarily connecting to any specific malacha, but there's called molid and nolad. You're not allowed to create new things or change forms of things on Shabbos. Not necessarily because it's a classic malacha, but rather Rashi explains one place in Masech Shabbos that there's a problem with being creative on Shabbos. There's not a problem with creating new entities on Shabbos. That's the issue with whipped cream. That's the issue with all of these things that you create new forms and all of these molid davar chadash on Shabbos. So there is an issue with these sauces as well, is that even if it's a solid item, when it goes onto the fire or onto the heating element, the fact that it's going to be changed into a liquid item, that would be considered an issue of nolad. I use that phrase very carefully. Nolad is different than molid. Molid would be something like this. I have ice, and I crush the ice to now make it slushy or to make it into liquid. That would be something that all opinions would hold that that's prohibited. Molid biadayim is something that is usur on Shabbos. I am now actively changing the form of an entity on Shabbos. That is something that's prohibited, both for Sfardim and Ashkenazim. What we just presented was something called nolad and not molid. Why is this a little different than actively crushing? Because I'm not actively changing it. I'm putting it in a situation that it's going to change forms. So that is something that Ashkenazim, unless there's a huge necessity, the Ramos says we try to be machmir on a regular Shabbos, unless there's a tzorach gadol, we try to be machmir not to cause, even if we're not actively causing, but put it in a situation where it's going to change forms, even if it's happening on its own, with the exception of, let's say, ice that's melting into a drink, that's obviously mutter because it's not nikar. But if you have something that's going to be a solid and it's going to heat up and it's going to now drip into be a liquid because of the area that I placed it into that heat area, so that would be a problem, even if technically I wouldn't be chayev alt bishel. Why would I not be chayev alt bishel? Because one could argue that, and the Mishnah Berurah writes like this, the fact that I put it on the area of the heat at a time when it was solid, so then I could view it as ein bishel achar bishel. Basically, what I'm arguing is congealed fat and congealed gravy, if it's all solid, so then one might argue that I wouldn't necessarily have a problem of bishel if it's a solid piece when I put it on. But I will have a problem of it changing forms, which according to Ashkenazim would be a problem of nola. So those are just two things to figure out and to play around with in terms of the issues that you're dealing with sauce. Again, because we paskin like Rav Moshe against the Prima Gadim, that we don't follow the majority. And even if there's a significant minority, but there's a minority that's recognizable there, that it's sitting in gravy, it's sitting in sauce. So that would be a problem. And in addition to that is, even if it's solid, there's another issue that the Rama says in terms of changing its form on Shabbos. So that's just to clarify all those issues when it comes to sauce, in terms of, even if the heating issue is not there, there might be an additional issue. They have to be concerned about an item that's going to change forms. Hold on 1 second. Yes. Is it a problem to leave it on the counter? If it's going to be heated on, if it's going to be put in an area that I know it's going to change its form on its own, and it's not dripping into something else, that would be a problem of Nola. Yeah. Yeah.
The question, if you take the food out of the gravy or whatever it is, right? And so you're saying, okay, so the residual amount that's on there, you could then put it on a heating device, like on a blech on Shabbos.
Again, I'm sorry. Say again.
If I take out take the chicken out of a gravy, like you're sitting in a gravy.
100%. 100%. That would be fine.
Could you?
That would be fine.
Okay. Just another question. I don't know. I heard that once someone told me that if you take the gravy and put it, let's say, like into a cliche and put hot water on it, you could heat the gravy up separately that way.
Okay. So we need to learn about cliches. So that's probably going to be when we get to cliches. That is potentially a heter, just like you can cook up something. If you hold, you can cook in a klishlishi, so you can take any raw item and cook it up in a klishlishi. This might even be better because it was once cooked.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I'm just going to hold off on that. You're right. You're 100% right. Rav Moshe would tell you that's fine because of a klishlishi, but I just want to make sure that I can clarify and explain what the issues are with klishlishi and what the different opinions are.
Okay. And then also any kind of like congealed sauce that would be on a chicken, like if it's not sitting in it, but if it's on top of the chicken before you put it on, and then that's what's going to drip off, that's okay?
I think if it's just a little bit of moisture that's on top of the chicken, and it, again, what is it? Does it look like a separate,
like a coating, like it would just look like it's like a coating on top of the chicken.
On top of the chicken, but it's not like it's not sitting in the sauce.
Like if you actually took it out of the other sauce, I guess.
Kind of like you painted on top.
I mean, I wouldn't actively do that, but it would have been there from before, I guess. Yeah.
Right. I think that would be okay. I think that would be like the moisture that Reb Shlomo Zalman's talking.
So more like just nothing on the bottom of the pan.
Right. It can't be sitting in something distinct. Right. Okay. So that's in terms of bishul achar bishul, in terms of the distinction between solid and liquid. There is a another additional very, very important distinction, which is also a split of Ashkenazim and Sfardim. What is the exact temperature that we have to be concerned with within this approach that liquid is more of a problem than solid, and we distinguish between liquid and solid? What temperature is going to be problematic to now activate bishul again, to now lose their original bishul? So logically, and this is the opinion of the Sfardim, of the opinion of the Mechaber, a person would say is that your critical temperature, like we spoke about last week, is Yad Soled Esbo. And whatever Yad Soled Esbo would be, if we're going to go with the minimum amount, let's say 113 for now. So if that's going to be your cutoff, so if it goes under Yad Soled Esbo, so then it's going to be a problem of reheating by definition. The liquid was hot. It was Yad Soled Esbo. Now the fact that it's no longer that temperature, that's going to be a problem. And now you're effectively reheating because of the fact that you're pushing it up back up to Yad Soled Esbo. However, what's fascinating is that we don't paskin like that. The Ashkenazim do not paskin like that. And the Rama has a tremendous leniency when it comes to this issue of bishul achar bishul, when it comes to a davar lach, when it comes to a liquid. The Rama says that it's only going to activate bishul again when you're reheating if it's nitstanen legamre. Means it totally cooled off. It became cool. However, if it still is warm, And it, even though it is under Yad Soledes Bo, that will not activate Bishul after, even if you reheat it. So that is a leniency. This plays a role, number one, when you're going to, let's say, put things back on the fire, take off the cholent. You don't have to be as concerned of it becoming less than Yad Soledes Bo, because as long as it didn't fully cool off, according to Ashkenazim, that's not going to be a problem. Only Nitzdan Legamre is going to be a problem. When would be a problem, according to Ashkenazim? Well, if you're taking something from the fridge and it's totally cold, and now you're going to put that liquid item back onto a Yad Soledes Bo area, that's something that the Rama himself would say, come on, that's considered Bishul Acher Bishul, even when it comes to a Dover Lach. So that's something that's relevant and very, very, very important. That really is a major distinction. It also comes up that there's a discussion amongst the poskim. You have sometimes these hot water urns that the water, in order to gauge how much water is inside the urn, there's like a little bit of a gauge in the front that some of the water from the urn comes out into that gauge and then shows you which level the water it is. So you know how much water is left in the urn. So the poskim discuss, well, when that water leaves, so that water cools off and goes underneath Yad Soledes Bo. So now if that water is going to get pumped back in to the urn, so now you're going to have an issue of Bishul Acher Bishul. So according to the Svardim, you're really up the creek because you don't really have a solution over here, because there's definitely going to be under Yad Soledes when it's going to leave that. According to Ashkenazim, you might have a little bit more of a leeway because it didn't fully cool off and it's not Nitzdan in Legamre, so therefore you have a little bit of a leeway in terms of Bishul Acher Bishul when it comes to liquid items. It's what to really contemplate that the Ashkenazim really need some explanation. I mean, we'll take the Kula and we'll run with it, don't get me wrong, but you know, why is that true? Why is there this new definition of Bishul of, is it fully cool? Is it still warm? Don't the definitions of Bishul usually, aren't they fundamentally based off of the heat of Yad Soledes Bo? Why did the Rama and the Ashkenazim create this new temperature that's relevant for Bishul Acher Bishul? So hopefully we'll come back to that. And that's going to have some serious implications if we could try to resolve that and figure out what the Rama is driving at, why he gives us this leniency and this new criteria for Bishul of Nitzan and Legamre that might lead to some potential leniencies in terms of other shilas that will come up in the kitchen. Okay, so that's just in terms of, again, we spoke about what there's an Isser Bishul on. We distinguish with solid versus liquid. And then we now introduced that there's we defined what solid and liquid is. We introduced briefly, we didn't give enough of a shiur. I think we spoke at length about it in years past in terms of the schita shiurim, and we could talk about it in the future of many shilas that discuss that relate to the molad nolad, creating new forms. That is an issue for Ashkenazim on Shabbos. And now we just went into the different temperatures in terms of reheating. So basically what we just set up is last week, the fundamentals of Bishul. What do you need for Bishul? Now we discussed more of what could Bishul be on, what type of food, not only a raw food, but also it could be reheated in certain situations when it comes to a liquid. And this really lends itself to the next issue, which I'm not sure we have so much time to get into, but it really opens up a very serious issue of what happens if you have a solid item, but that solid item might not have gone through the classic Bishul mode. Means we have the concept called Bishul, Ein Bishul Acher Bishul. And that, at least when it came to a solid item, everyone subscribed to. Okay, a liquid item was a machlokes between the Rishonim and a debate, and we're machmir on that. But when it comes to a solid item, once it's cooked, it's cooked. So now the question is, but we know when it comes to our kitchens, and this introduction I'm now going to introduce to you is not only relevant for Shabbos. It's important that one knows how to distinguish in all areas of the kitchen in the following halacha. And this affects kashrus. this affects, you know, in terms of Hagala, Liban, all these things, Pesach, there are different modes and ways of cooking items that Halacha and Shulchan Aruch distinguishes through with all the time. Let me just name a few of them. There's Bishul, which is by definition using a liquid medium. You're not cooking directly on the fire, but rather you're cooking within some sort of liquid medium in order to cook it up. You can bake, which is afia, okay? Then one that's more similar to baking, but might taste a little bit different and might have a slightly different process, which is called tzli, like lamashal we just had in Pesach. The Korban Pesach is an Issur D'Oraisa if you eat it cooked. What does that mean? It means if you have any moisture that gets connected, and there it with Mirtz Hashem in the Beis Hamikdash, you know, is rebuilt, there it's going to be relevant for even what you shmir on top, even some moisture the Gemara in Pesachim talks about that comes out, you know, on the top of the Korban Pesach, that's going to be a problem of Bishul. And you have to eat it kiyam tzliyesh. There's a lot of yisurim that are connected to the way you would eat the Korban Pesach. It's got to be tzli. It's got to be roasted on the fire. It can't even, it can't even be in a pot. It's got to be directly hitting the fire. Then there's tigun. There's frying. And then there's tigun with a lot of oil or with not so much oil, which is also a halachic distinction. If there's deep fried or just regular fried, where the oil is going to be consumed. And then there's even less where you're just spraying Pam, which is like not even considered like a fry. What else? What is there? Bishul, Afia, Tigun, Sli. Okay, that's it. So now I could have many different items that were made ready before Shabbos, but they weren't necessarily going through the Bishul process. They weren't sitting in a liquid medium. So now, do I apply this concept of aim bishul achar bishul? Or do I say, no, it has to be a repetition of the same exact process? That's the question that is so important for the next part of our shiur. Lamashal, I went through a baking process. I could bake bread. I have croutons. They're just basically baked bread, or just they were made it into crunchy, you know, toast, these croutons. And now I want to throw them into my pot. So now do I say ein bishul achar bishul, or do I say no yesh bishul achar afia? All that went through is afia, so therefore that's going to be a problem. Or let's say the opposite. I boiled chicken on Erev Shabbos, and now I want to put that on the hot plate, or I want to put that on a fire. Is that going to be an issue of bishul achar bishul? Ain bishul achar bishul, or do you say no, yesh tzli or yesh tzli achar bishul, and therefore that's going to be a problem. So now do I have to cheshbon? Okay, I have a lakshin kugel. The lakshin kugel was sitting in water. That's the way the noodles were cooked. So now do I say I can't reheat this lakshin kugel because the original process was with bishul, and now I have no liquid medium, so therefore that's going to be a problem? These are some serious, serious questions that not only affect whether or not I can put croutons into my soup, but also affect how do I prepare the food? Do I have to trace back and figure out what were all the modes that this item went through and the whole procedure that this item went through to get to the stage that it is in right now in order to reheat? So this is a debate in the Rishonim, because there is a Gemara in Pesachim that the Gemara in Pesachim says, if you cook matzah, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. Why not? The matzah was baked, and then afterwards the matzah was cooked. So the Gemara says you're not yotzei. So came along half of the Rishonim and said, ah, you see from here, yesh bishul achar afia. You see that bishul after afia still exists, and you don't apply the din of ein bishul achar bishul, and you see that the bishul has the ability to destroy the afia. So just like in Hilchos Matzah, the Bishul destroyed the Afia, in Hilchos Shabbos, the Bishul is going to be a transgression after the baking, after the Afia. What's the difference? So came along half of the Rishonim and said, this is absolutely prohibited. and don't apply your hakdama of what you spoke about in Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, don't apply that to afia and any other mode or procedure that doesn't look like, smell like, and taste like bishul. However, other Rishonim said, what do you bring me a raya from matzah? Matzah needs to taste like matzah. There's a halacha that matzah has to taste, but even tam matzah. You need to make sure that the matzah tastes like matzah, whatever it represents. We'll talk about it at Pesach time, but there's a halacha that it has to taste like matzah. So if there's a halacha that has to take like matzah, so then if you're going to cook it afterwards, you're not going to be yotze the mitzvah. That was a unique halacha that pertained to specifically the laws of matzah. Don't extrapolate from there to the kitchen of whether or not I can't apply my principle anymore of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. Ein Bishul Achar Bishul speaks about any heating procedure. And even if it was a different procedure, even if it was afia, so we'll say, don't worry about it. Once it's heated up once, you don't have to be concerned. This is an item that's fully ready and is going to be considered mutter. So the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Bishul in Shabbos brings down both of those opinions. And we are machmir. We are machmir, and we want to make sure that when it comes to heating up our items, that we go through the exact same procedure, because we are concerned with those Rishonim that hold that there is cooking after afia, and therefore there could be a potential Isser D'Oraisa. So Lamashal. If I would take a baked crouton or I would take challah and I would put it directly into my soup pot, that would be a serious issue and I would never be allowed to do that. Okay? That would be something that's going to be concerning. But now I have the opposite question. So just like that's usur for me to do when it comes to my soup pot, so now I have a question. So now why don't we have the following issue? If I had something that was cooked before Shabbos, or boiled before Shabbos through the Bishul process. So now if I'm putting it on a heating element, like a hot plate, without any liquid medium, so why isn't that a violation of Ein Sli Achar Bishul? Everyone understand what I'm asking? Yeah? Thumbs up? Mutes? Okay. This is a very big problem. This is a problem that the Mishnah Berurah raised. And the Mishnah Berurah didn't have an answer to this question. Mishnah Berurah in the Bir Halacha writes, I don't understand how people can heat up half of the foods that they cooked through a cooking process. Okay, if you only baked it beforehand, if you only roasted it beforehand, so then fine, you're doing the same procedure. But if you boiled it, if you boiled it, so then, or you're talking about a noodle kugel or something like that, so then how is it possible to put on a heating element? Isn't that a problem of Yesh Tzli Achar Bishul? So this is I always remember this story. I was once in a program for Pesach. I was not officially the Rav there, but I was friendly with the with one of the head mashkichim there, who was a fine Talmud Chacham, and we were schmoozing over Yom Tov. So I was davening Hallel once in the minyan on Yontif, and I heard coming closer to the minyan that there was a big rash, there was a big debate, there was a big machlokes, and the issue that was brewing, and finally they were approaching, and they came up to me. So what was the issue? So there was a kiddush that was planned after davening. One of the things on the schedule on the program. At before they have the lunch, whatever, they have lunch at 1 o'clock or something. So you gotta make sure that you're taking care of your guests and you're gonna serve them kiddush on Pesach morning after davening, which by the way is in itself is a very complicated thing. What to use for kiddush, because you don't have mizonos when it comes to, at least this is a non-gebrux program, so that's that anyways needs some education in terms of what you're able to make kiddush on Pesach morning, but that's for another issue. So the issue was that they had a debate about, I don't remember exactly what the item was. I think maybe it was cutlets, but the mashkiach told the caterer that he cannot heat up the cutlets because this is a problem of tzli achar bishul, and you're not allowed to do that, like the Mishnah Berurah says, and that's the problem. And the caterer said, I put it on the program that there's going to be kiddush. I can't not serve this at Kiddush, this is not an option. So the Mashkiach, he said, if I can give him, he said to the caterer, he told him to go, we'll go over it to me. And if I can give him a reason why he thinks that it should be mutter, so then he'll allow me to do it. So I remember they came over and I said that this is a machloikis. The Mashkiach was passing like the Mishnah Berurah, like this Bir Halacha that I pointed out. But the caterer, the head of the program, is relying on the Shita of the Chazon Ish. There is a Kula of the Chazon Ish that disagrees with this Mishnah Berurah. And he says a fascinating Chiddush, which really helps us in many of the situations. And many poskim do rely on this Chazon Ish. I like to call this Chazon Ish the July 4th Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish says Tzli is something that's sitting on an open fire, you know, it's affected by the fire. It's not talking about the heat that now, just because you don't have liquid, you know, that you're now considered roasting on a fire. It's true. The Mishnah Berurah is right. Technically, there is no moisture that's sitting and there's no liquid that's sitting in a liquid medium on top of within this pot that I'm heating up on top of this heating element. But now that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to define that as tzli. Tzli means like the Karban Pesach. Tzli means something that's going to get affected by the open fire, by the flames, by the July 4th barbecue, the Franks, you know, that's going to have some of the taste of a barbecue, you know, on it that now is going to be like tzli. But you have this item sitting in a pot, and it's sitting in a pot on top of an area where it's not even connected to any open flames. It's not going to have that effect of tzli, and therefore the Chazon Ish came through with a major kula and called many of the situations that we are going to be reheating these items if they were cold. Now, you know, a solid kugel like that, or a solid or a boiled chicken that now, even though it's not sitting in a moisture, it's sitting in a liquid, that would still be considered ein bishel achar bishel and would be a tremendous kula that people could rely on. Some people adopt the Chazon Ish's kula. Some people don't adopt the Chazon Ish's kula. But I thought it was enough to rely on for this program. And, you know, I'm comfortable with people relying on the Chazon Ish. I think many people have that minig to use that in terms of ways to reheating and not tracing back on the way this item was cooked originally. But that's specifically when it comes to tzli. That's specifically when it comes to this issue of yesh tzli achar bishel. But when it comes to afia, when it comes to baked items, when it comes to other changing of forms, we should point out that the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chassid says to make toast, he thinks is changing the form and would be a problem from bread to now making maybe a tzli achar afia, that would be a problem. Your mom is changing the taste, you're changing the form, that would be a problem. So too, when you're taking bread and now you're sticking it in soup, that would be potentially problematic. Hopefully next time, we'll try to figure out possibilities of ways that maybe you could put the croutons and the bread into the bowl of soup as opposed to the pot on the fire. But that will be more of some of the things that Miriam was asking about in terms of klishlishi, klisheni. We have to really learn more of the details of klisheni and klishlishi before we get to those conclusions and things like how you make tea, how you make coffee, and things as we remove away from the pot on the fire. Just to before we close, just to say something in Yana Dioma, the Yontif of Lag BaOmer is a very important time on our calendar, important time for each and every one of us, for our families. More so on a normal year, I guess, in terms of outings. Someone asked me what I did in honor of Lag BaOmer, so I said I moved my laptop from my office to the counter in the kitchen. That was my outing. You know, that's the nature of the situation. But on a deeper level, Lag BaOmer is very, very relevant this year. And I really just want to share with you a Gemara that really resonates with me, and I think is really what the perspective of Lag BaOmer is all about, and is so much more meaningful than any other year in the situation that we find ourselves. Rabbi Akiva, as we know, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the Tana of Lag BaOmer. His yard site is Lag BaOmer. But we also know that there's this connection to his Rebbe, to Rabbi Akiva, that the Talmidim stopped dying on Lag BaOmer. So the truth is, it's really a little bit strange to have such a yontif just because a catastrophe was avoided. You know, that's not really a source of celebration. So the Pri Chadash says something really beautiful. The Pri Chadash says that it's not really that the Talmidim stopped dying, but it's what Rabbi Akiva was able to do after his Talmidim stopped dying, and the fact that he started building immediately after they stopped dying. So the Pri Chadash says the celebration of Lag BaOmer is the focus and the perspective after the tragic loss of all of his Talmidim, that he didn't stop, and he continued with the right perspective, and he built with even just five Talmidim, and he was Moser the Torah and created all of Torah Shebaal Peh. Everything that we discussed right now is all because of Rabbi Akiva's perspective post Lag BaOmer to continue moving on, even if he didn't have the great yeshiva that he once had. That is with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. But that's really something that you find in common both by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was a person, as the Gemara in Brachos says, that he was traveling. Listen to this Gemara. Rabbi Akiva was traveling, and he had a candle to direct him. He had a rooster to help him get up in the morning, and he had a donkey to help him schlep to bring along his belongings. He was awaiting to park himself and lodge in a certain motel, and they told him, "We are booked, there is no room, and you can't stay here." He had no options, the Gemara in Bracha says. And he continued traveling, and he lodged outside in the field, outside the city. The Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva's immediate response when he left the hotel was "Kol manda avid rachmana letav avid." That famous statement: "Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is for the good." Then the Gemara continues and said, when Rabbi Akiva was lying out there, so his candle was blown out. There was a wind, a strong wind that came and blew out his candle, and Rabbi Akiva was in the dark. And Rabbi Akiva, instead of responding the way we would respond, is "Come on," you know, and roll our eyes. Rabbi Akiva responded, "Kol manda avir rachmana letavov." Then a cat came and ate the rooster, and again Rabbi Akiva responded, "Kol manda avir rachmana letavov." Then a lion came and attacked his donkey. And Rabbi Akiva did not have anything to even transport his stuff. And Rabbi Akiva continued and said, "Kol manda avid rachmana letav avid." The Gemara concludes, and listen carefully. The Gemara concludes that Rabbi Akiva heard that night that there were bandits that came into the city and robbed and attacked all of the people that were staying in that motel. And Rabbi Akiva said, just like I said to you continuously, but listen to what he said: "Kol ma she'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu letova asa." So many quote this Gemara and say, "Ah, Rabbi Akiva had a positive perspective. Rabbi Akiva always said kol ma da'avir rachmana letavavit." That's not the way the Gemara concludes. Rabbi Akiva changes from a statement of Aramaic. In the process, he was saying at each episode, "Kol ma da'avid rachmana letavavid," and then after he hears about the attack in that motel that he was originally going to stay in, he uses the language in Hebrew of "Kol ma she'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu letova asa." Why is that? What's the reason? So the answer is, I saw a beautiful idea, and it really connects to what today and what we're experiencing. Rabbi Akiva always had a memra. Rabbi Akiva always used to say in a translated language, in Aramaic, in a language that is not as precise, in a language that is not as clear, that doesn't have as much chashivas and clarity as the Lashon HaKodesh does. He used to remind himself, "I don't know, I don't understand, but I know the Mesorah that I have that even without the clarity, I'm still going to repeat myself. I'm going to translate to myself. I'm going to say in Aramaic in that blurry night, Komanda Avi Rachmona Latavov. But then after all was said and done, Rabbi Akiva said, you remember that statement that I kept on saying in that situation of lack of clarity, in those blurry nights, in that statement that I couldn't point to the way that it's going to be for the good, but I knew and I believed and I had a munah, and that's what I kept repeating myself. That all led up to what? Komasha asa kodesh baruch hu l'tov asa. That all ultimately led up to something that I could point to. Zeh Hashem kivinu lo, something that I can point to with a finger, lasid lavo, that I was always with him. Imo anochi b'tzari, he was always with me, although I didn't know. And that's the same exact statement. Yet today I can say it b'loshon hakodesh. Today I can say it with confidence. Today I can say it with clarity, but I never changed from what was to now, other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu just revealed to me that everything that what I believed actually came true. And that's what Rabbi Akiva represents. And that's what Lag BaOmer needs to signal to us in these so difficult days. I'm not trying to argue that there is no darkness. But I'm trying to argue that what I said to someone on the phone from the shul called me for a little chizik today, the easiest way to be mechazik is that there's no one else that we could depend on right now. We need to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending the message to us that he is the one who's governing this totally. No one else, no leader, no political power, no doctor has any grasp on anything. Things steer is saying left and right. The answer is HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this in 1 second with one little bug, and he could remove this, and he is with us every step of the way, even though we don't understand it and we don't know how it's going to play out, and it's not clear to us. Right now we're saying things in Aramaic, kol manda av rachman al tav of it. But we need to recognize what Rabbi Akiva passed on to his Talmud when his Talmudim stopped dying, and when he went with that ma'alech of kol manda av rachman al tav of it, he didn't know that there would be a Torah Shebaal Peh. He didn't know that there would be a Shas. He didn't know what would be the end game. He knew that he had to start and he had to say those statements in Aramaic and build Talmud Bavli. And he did so with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai continued with the statement of, the Gemara has a whole debate of whether or not Asida in the years to come, are Klal Yisrael going to affect the Torah? In Karen B'Yavna, the Gemara says, many Tanoim said, Torah is something that is hasida lishokach, that people are going to forget. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said, chas v'shalom. How could anyone ever say that? Chas v'shalom shetishokach Torah mizayr shal Yisrael. How could Torah ever be nishkach? And that's the Sofei Tevas, Rabbi Nachman of Bresov says of Yochai, shetishokach Torah mi Yisrael. You can't say that. You can't believe that. You got to believe. You don't know how. I don't know how my kids are going to be able to be zoicher the Torah, but we're going to do it. Whether it's through Zoom, whether it's through all the difficulties, we're going to manage. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognize all of this. And there will be a day that Amir Tzashem, we will be able to celebrate and say a clear statement, Zeh Hashem kivinu lo. That's the only way for us to get through this matzav. There's no other way. It's just to depend, absolute dependency on the Ribbono Shelom. In a situation where our lives are not created for a situation like this. Every other situation has been situations where we could control a little bit. We had tactics. We have strategies. We have technology. We have ways that we can maneuver the situation. We have medicine. We have things we understand. We have science. Comes HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, it's only me. And it's complex. It's difficult. But it's also simple. It's also very simple. It's that koma da'avir rachman al-latav of it. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not forgetting us. Klal Yisrael and Mirsh Hashem will continue. We're going to get through this. And one day we'll be able to see and understand the picture, and we'll be able to make the statement in that clear way. And hopefully we should follow Rabbi Akiva and his Talmud, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and we should see Emirtz Hashem the Paris of Shas Bavli and Talmud Torah, and Emirtz Hashem future Klal Yisrael celebrating together Emirtz Hashem La'asid Lava with B'yas Mashiach Tzikina. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Have a good night.